Federal News
Radio. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
It's been an exciting week for Stratford University. We opened up classes at our new Virginia Beach campus this week.
Good.
And the building just looks beautiful. Everybody's very happy with that facility. And now we're working on our new campus in Alexandria. We'll be opening up there in March of 2014. So we've been doing space planning on that. So. Mm-hmm. A little bit of movement for Stratford, and we always enjoy offering our courses in a new location. And it's been a very busy week in technology. Things are just happening all over the place, and people are trying to get kids interested in coding. There's some code.org projects going on to get young kids, more kids interested in coding. It's really a good way to learn how to think clearly, to learn how to code. You just don't have to be technology guy. Wolfram Alpha launched a problem generator to help kids study their math, which we'll talk a bit about later in the show. And this week we're going to feature the man behind Spotify. He's got an interesting Daniel Ek. He's from actually Sweden, and he's the man behind Spotify. And of course, it was a huge mailbag.
Tremendously big.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, it's really hard to get.
You should probably drop it before.
These are really the heaviest emails I've ever had to carry.
We need an assistant now.
Yeah,
it's getting to be so much work.
Really are. We do. Mm-hmm. We need an assistant. Doctor, you know, Mr. Big Voice being unionized, he won't help.
He just crosses his arms.
He won't lift a finger.
Folds his arm. Walks into the corner.
So we got an email from Tom Laird on LinkedIn. He was one of my LinkedIn connections.
Ah.
Hi, Dr. Schertz. I'm a longtime listener and lover of your Tech Talk Classroom of the Internet radio show. I discovered it on Federal News Radio online several years back, maybe 2007. I've really appreciated it ever since. It's cool. But please explain to Jim and David why LinkedIn is the best platform for B2B and that Facebook and Pinterest are for B2C. Okay, don't they get that? I'm trying to think, when have we talked about this?
Well, I don't know that I've ever expressed an interest in Pinterest or the other
but
platform.
It is true. LinkedIn is actually great for business applications. I'm a very big LinkedIn user. We use it for recruiting, and it's extremely effective in that regard. I'm not really much of a Facebook guy.
No,
I mean,
nor am I.
I've got a Facebook account because we need it for Stratford just to show a presence, but it is really not my cup of tea. And I think business to consumer, Facebook and Pinterest probably, and actually Stratford, we do use those for B2C, but we do a lot of our recruiting on LinkedIn, so that would be kind of a business application. Also, what is the name of David's walk-in theme song again? Do tell.
Should I answer that question?
Yes, you should answer that.
That is by a current popular recording artist, I use the words in quotes, named Kesha.
Kesha?
The S is replaced by a dollar sign, and the song is called TikTok, spelled TikTok. So if he's going to rush off to iTunes and get that song, that's what
there
he's looking for.
There you go.
Kesha.
Okay. Keep up your great and always informative Tech Talk shows. I'm pretty busy these days with my visual content, infographics, and mobile marketing business, so I don't often get to listen live these days. But the recordings I catch up on are always excellent. Keep delivering that worthwhile content, and thanks for joining my LinkedIn network.
That's very kind.
Sincerely, Tom Laird. That was a great email. Loved that. Well, actually, we really do enjoy hearing from our listeners. We got an email from Lauren in Bethesda. Dear Dr. Schertz, I have Verizon Fios internet only with no TV or phone. My internet connection is not working, and they replaced my router. The Verizon instructions asked me to put the Verizon CD to configure my system, but I've got an iMac and no CD drive. Is there a way I can configure this thing without using the Verizon software and CD? I sure hope so. Do you believe that this new router will solve my problem? Help is most appreciated. Best wishes, Lauren. Well, I think if it's a hardware problem and not your fiber connection, then this should fix it. Now, actually, you don't need a CD to configure it. I don't like to use that configuration CD because they load programs on your computer. It turns out that your computer is probably already configured to use the router because you basically what they use you use DHCP dynamic host protocol configuration protocol DHCP, and that just simply requests the router to download the IP address, your computer's internal IP address, and also the gateway address. It also downloads the any other address information is needed, and your computer is still set up to do that. So you can actually handle that. Now the router should come already configured with an admin password, and you've got a Wi-Fi password. It's probably on a tag that's stuck on the back of your router. So what you're going to have to do, you've now got a different Wi-Fi password. So any of your computers that are wirelessly connected to the router, when you actually connect them to the wireless Wi-Fi connection, it's going to ask you for the password. You're going to have to put in a new password. And I believe that's all you're going to have to do. They already have an administrative password on your router. Now, I'll tell you what I did, though. I mean, my router came with passwords that they had pre-assigned. I changed them all. I didn't like having mm-hmm. pre-assigned passwords. So I actually went in, I logged onto my router, and you can log on 192.168.1.1 would be the address, and you can log on to it, and it's a web page, and you can put in the admin password and username that are printed on that back label and log into it, and you can change the password to the router. You can also change your Wi-Fi password if you want, but you really don't have to. So I think you should be good to go. And actually, I never use that configuration CD. We got an email from Margaret. Dear Doc Schertz, thank you for providing your audience with content worth hearing and coming back to weekly. I really don't know what's going on with my home page. It keeps changing back to Yahoo search after I've set it to Google. What have I done? It keeps coming back. Is this Yahoo hardwired into my computer? What's going on? I've got an iMac, and sometimes I get a colored spinning wheel, and then I've got to restart the computer. Thanks, Margaret, who have not quite mastered the iMac. Well, Margaret, your browser homepage is being hijacked. Now, you could have downloaded some new software and installed a toolbar. It turns out if you happen to install the Yahoo add-on, it will reset it to your Yahoo homepage every time you turn the browser on and off. So I'd get rid of any toolbar extensions. More than likely, that's what you've done. Now, I'd also scan your computer for spyware. Sometimes spyware will do that, but more than likely, it is a toolbar that you downloaded. As far as that spinning item goes, that indicates that your computer is having some processing problem. Huh. Like it could be something it's having trouble maybe getting data from your hard drive. That might be an indication of something where it's having trouble reading a program. So I would probably go in and do a. I would take on my hard drive. I might do a, go scan the hard drive. There are programs to scan the hard drive. You can actually defragment the hard drive. I would go through some of those processes to see whether that might be the problem. It might be looking for a program in your configuration that doesn't exist anymore. So, that might be an indication of a problem, but I'd probably go back and scan the hard drive, defrag the hard drive to see whether that is going to fix the problem. But I think getting rid of that Yahoo page should be quite easily done. So get back to me to see if any of those ideas work. We got an email from Jim in Maryland. Dear Tech Talk, you made a mistake last week.
Uh-oh,
Jim. Okay, Jim is the guy that's always going to tell me about my mistakes. You said that you, if you add a comment to somebody else's homepage, you can't delete it. Well, you are wrong. You can delete the comment from somebody else's homepage. I still love the show, but, you know, try to keep the information perfect and don't make any more mistakes.
Yeah. Well, keep it perfect, Doc.
That's right. Well, thanks. Thanks, Jim. You're really hard on me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Jim, you are correct. When you post something to somebody else's homepage, after you've posted it, there's a small symbol. It looks like a V, and it's very light gray in the upper right-hand corner. You click on that V, and a little drop-down menu will come down, and you'll have a choice where you can either edit the post or delete the post. And that same little light V is on the mobile platform as well as on the PC version of Facebook. So actually, Jim, I went back, and I posted something to somebody else's homepage. I just said, this is a test post. Please forgive me. And then I went back and I used the inverted. I clicked on it both from my mobile phone as well as from my laptop, and I was able to edit it as and then finally delete it. So, Jim, I have to accept full responsibility for that error. But
wow.
Thank you for noticing that. We got an email from Ron in McLean. Dear Dr. Schertz, as a longtime weekly listener from all the way back to your WJFK days and an admirer of both your technical and scientific knowledge and entrepreneurial success, I've never gone wrong applying your suggested solutions to insolvable problems. Now I've got another one. Okay, I run my own company, and I'm running legacy software using Windows 7 running in the XP mode. I've got Windows 7 Professional. And because this legacy software will only run in XP, it's not going to run in Windows 7. I've got to run the virtual XP machine inside Windows 7. Now my problem is that Microsoft is going to retire Windows XP April of 2014. Now that means there will be no further security updates. How's that going to affect me? I mean, I wonder if I could get some continuing updates over time to keep this up to date, or what are my options? Well, actually, you can probably continue running the XP version, Ron. Now, here's the problem. 37% of the installed base of operating systems happens to be Windows XP globally. And there's a lot of XP installed in China and the Asian countries. It's very popular, and there's going to continue to be a large installed base because XP is a very popular operating system. What's going to happen, because that's a huge target, as soon as they stop giving security updates, the hackers are going to go for them. And anytime they do a security update for, say, Windows 7 or Windows 8, the hackers are going to reverse engineer that update to see whether the vulnerability that's being fixed is also a vulnerability that occurs in Windows XP. And chances are, in many cases, it is. So you can expect to see quite a few XP exploits out there. Now, how are they going to get to your computer? They're either going to go through the internet, which would be the common way, or they're going to go through a thumb drive. You know, that's how the Stuxnet virus got into the centrifuges there in Iran, through thumb drives. So my advice to you would be to, if you want to run in the XP mode, this legacy software, do not surf the web while you're in the XP mode. Just stay off the internet. If you don't go on the internet, none of these viruses really matter. And I would also make certain that you don't put a thumb drive in your computer while you're in the XP mode. And if you don't put a thumb drive in your computer while you're in the XP mode, and if you don't get on the internet while you're in the XP mode, if all you're doing is running your legacy software, you're going to be safe. It's not really a problem.
It's a lot to remember, though.
I know. Well, you just stay in isolation. You just pull the plug, and then people can't get to you. That's really how it is.
Go under the radar.
Now, and I got a couple of other suggestions for you. I would recommend that you back up that you back up your virtual server. So suppose the worst happens and you just get infected, and then you'd like to then fix it. You can back up the files that are just specifically used by this virtual machine within Windows 7. And you can go to Microsoft support, and it gives you their four or five files. You got to get the exact path, and there's two of them are an XML file, and it's a little bit complicated, but you can do that. But there's an easier way to back up just the XP version of your system. There's a program called XP-More, and it will make backup of the virtual machines very easy. You don't have to edit any of the XML files. You can just do it. And so you can get XP-More at xpmorecodex.com. And so I will post this link, or you can just search for XP-More, and you can find it. That's how I would recommend that you would actually back it up. But I have to tell you, there are people that are still running Windows 95, and they've been running Windows 95 for years, and they don't have any problem. Mm-hmm. They just don't go on the internet. There are also a lot of embedded operating system. XP's in a lot of embedded systems. It's going to continue running. So I don't think you're going to have any problems at all. Now, but just be careful and stay offline. We got an email from Rachel in Lorton. Dear Tech Talk, I've got an HP computer that came with 8 gigabytes of RAM. It'll take up to 16. And so the thing is, I could put 16 gigs of RAM in it, but I have to take the two 4-gig cards and throw them away and put in two 8 gigs because I only have two slots. And both slots are used by the 4 gigs. Do you think it's worthwhile to do that? Now, I've already optimized my machine with a solid-state drive, and it's made a big difference. Thanks, Rachel and Lorton. Well, whether or not you need more RAM really depends on how you're using your computer. I mean, the solid-state drive was a good idea, and that would give you some real speed addition. But probably, in most likelihood, 8 gigabytes is enough. You see, if you've got a 32-bit machine, you can only address 4 gigs. So I'm assuming that you've got a 64-bit machine, which could address more than 4 gigs. And the only time you would use that additional RAM would be if you'd have, say, giant images, or you'd have giant spreadsheets. You want to dump the whole giant, 4 or 5 gigabyte file into RAM while you were operating on it. So it's possible you could use it if you had some applications with giant files, and you just get quicker speed if you put it all in RAM. You don't have to swap back and forth to the hard drive. Now, in fact, at Stratford, we run virtual machines a lot. So we're in the classroom. If we're running two or three virtual machines in parallel, each virtual machine would like to have 4 gigs. So if you're running multiple virtual machines, you in fact could use more than 8 gigabytes of RAM if you're doing that. So it depends on your usage. It sounds to me, Rachel, that you're not doing either one of those things just based on your email. What you could do is you could run the Process Explorer, and then while you're in Process Explorer, hit Control-I, and then you'll get a summary. And that'll give you the memory usage, and just see whether your memory usage is close to 8 gigs. And if it's always far below the 8-gig limit, just forget it. You're fine for now, and getting more RAM won't help you a bit at all. Well, I'm telling you, we love all your emails.
Absolutely do.
So you want to email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And I'm also, by the way, monitoring the Facebook page. If you have any comments during the show, simply go to facebook.com/techtalkonline.
You are listening to the Classroom of the Airwaves, Tech Talk Radio, coming to you from the studios of WFED, Federal News Radio in Washington, D.C. You can hear us on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM HD2, and, of course, Federal News Radio.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
It's time. Time to put put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner and Woodbridge. It's time. Time to take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. Or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University, it's time to be more.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes, we are going to talk about Daniel Ek. E-K is how you spell his last name. Daniel Ek. He is co-founder and CEO of Spotify, a music streaming service that is taking the internet by storm. Daniel Ek was born February 21st, 1983, in Stockholm, Sweden. Now, music and technology introduced to Daniel at an early age. At age five, he was given a guitar. And he was also given by his mother and by his stepfather, he was given a Commodore 20 computer. It's a little competition here. The mom wanted the artistic Daniel and the dad wanted the techie Daniel. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to compete with the two toys. Actually, he was a natural at both instruments. He loved to play the guitar. Within 2 years, he was writing basic code and playing MTV music in the background. At age 14... Daniel Ek decided to get into business. This was right, this was 83, this was 93, this would be around 97. Right at the, like everybody was getting into websites, kind of the whole dot, just before the big dot-com era just taking off. And in Sweden, companies were charging $50,000 to make commercial websites. So what he did, he got a few of his friends together, and they used the school's computer lab. He learned HTML, they learned Photoshop. And they started, he set up a little company to make websites for companies, but he only charged $5,000. And he got a boatload of business. You know, companies say $5,000, $50,000 was a real. And so he started making for, you know, small, you know, like bar, small, medium, small companies, the websites. And he was actually pulling in a profit of $15,000 a month. He actually was earning more than his teacher, more than his parents. This was at age 14.
That's amazing.
Now, the other thing is, you know, you had to host these websites somewhere. So he went down and he bought a bunch of servers and he put them in his bedroom. And he started hosting web pages and he earned another $5,000 a month hosting web pages in his basement. So he was pulling in $20,000 a month back in 1997. Now, his bedroom would get so hot, he'd go into his bedroom. It was like
because of all the computers going.
Yeah, so Daniel said as soon as he would get home and go to his bedroom, he'd have to strip down to his underwear because it was so hot in the bedroom. So there he is. There's a businessman. They're in his office. They're in his underwear because the servers are so hot.
That's funny.
Now, this was when he was 14. When he was 16, he thought, okay, I'm ready to work for Google. So he applied for a job at Google.
Whoops.
Is this a Mr. Big Voice?
Mr. Big Voice had decided that there's a union minimum, so he's decided he needed to make another appearance there.
So at 16, he decided, okay, I'm going to want to work for Google. I'm a hotshot. And so he applied to Google, and Google said, look, you don't even have a college degree. Why don't you come back after you've been to college? So he didn't. He was turned down at Google. But he did get a job at a company called Jaja. J-A-J-J-A. How do you think you pronounce it?
I think you got it right.
Jaja. And he worked on search engine optimization. That was at age 16. After high school, he graduated about a year later, so he enrolled in engineering at the Royal Institute of Technology there in Stockholm. He went to school for 8 weeks, and there was all this mathematical theory. And he started talking to, you know, the professors, and he realized he'd have to do a whole year of theory before he could do anything. So after 8 weeks, he was out of there. He dropped out of the Royal Institute of Technology. And he decided to do, you know, he was pretty good at programming, writing code. So there was this Stockholm-based ad network called Trade Doubler. It's one of these places that delivers ads for advertisers. You know, they've got a lot of them around now. And so Trade Doubler wanted to track what was going on with their site. So he wrote software that would allow Trade Doubler to analyze what they were doing so they could do their billings properly and all of that stuff. He wanted to keep track of what was going on. So he wrote some very excellent software that the company loved,
mm-hmm.
and it was so effective that, but he had worked it out where he owned it, and he was just doing these reports for them. So they wanted to buy the rights to his software in 2006. So he sold it to them, get this, for $1 million.
Wow.
For $1 million. So that was 2006. So he was born in 80. So how old was he then? He was... maybe in his early 20s, I mm-hmm. guess.
Already 20s. Millionaire.
Yeah, but then he had also patented some of these ideas, and the company said, well, wait a minute here. We need the rights to these patents, too. So he sold them the patent rights for another $1 million. So he made $2 million.
But in hindsight, probably a bargain, right?
Yeah, because the company that he sold them to went public, and the guy who owned it made $70 million.
Yeah.
When they went public. Mm-hmm. So there he was. At age 23.
You think they took advantage of him?
No. Yeah, because they came back and worked together again.
Oh, okay.
So at age 23, he's in early 20s. I don't think they took it. I think they paid him well for mm-hmm. what he did. They'd have taken advantage of him if they would have hired him as an employee and then just paid him his salary, not giving him anything.
And took all of his stuff, right?
Took all of his stuff. I think they've treated him very fairly,
okay.
actually.
All right.
So there he was at age 23. He was a millionaire. He had dropped out of school. And he said, so, what else is there? And he was sort of like alone, depressed. He didn't know what to do. So he said, aha, I'm going to become a playboy. He said, I got the money. I'm young. I'm ready to
I'm
go.
Good-looking.
I'm ready to. No, he's not good looking. That was his problem. You can look him up. You can look up Daniel Eck.
I'm doing that right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, he wasn't good looking. That was actually the downfall here.
So said, the money part of the equation was
I'm ready. I'm ready to be a playboy, baby. So he got himself a bachelor pad down in Stockholm, one of the places. He got himself a red Ferrari convertible, and he was ready to go.
He looks like a tech guy.
But here was the problem. He just wasn't attractive to women.
Yeah, I could see that.
And so, you know, he was trying to really be this cool guy. He was like, but it just wasn't working out for him. So he actually only attracted the wrong kind of women. See, there were certain women that were attracted to him because of his money.
Right, and that's the
and that was
time.
It, and that was it, and so he's saying. So after about a year of this Playboy thing, he said, "You know, this is not working out for me." He said, "I'm even more miserable now as a failed Playboy." See, he actually was happier before he failed as a Playboy. So as a failed Playboy, he was even more unhappy.
Well, he made the realization that the only thing people wanted him for was his money. Right?
That's right. So then he sold his Ferrari. And he moved into a log cabin in the woods about 20 minutes from his parents' house. And he still loved to play the guitar, so he went to a log cabin. He started playing his guitar and, you know, really getting in the groove. And he says, you know, what I really realize is I love music. I love music. So he thought, maybe I should be a professional musician. So he started working on that, and then he realized he wasn't good enough to be mm-hmm. a professional musician, but he was good enough to enjoy playing music and entertaining his friends. So he was sitting in there, and he said, you know, I also love technology. You know, I just love all this. He said, maybe I could bring music and technology together. Well, it turned out that Trade Doubler's chairman, Martin Lorentzen. He's the guy that gave him the $2 million. He was actually 43 years old at the time. In 2005, he had taken Trade Doubler public and netted $70 million for himself. So he was like rich. and he was saying, is this all there is? I mean, he was bored and he was like drifting around. So he came out and found Daniel Ek there in this log cabin playing the guitar. and so we had two guys. One guy had all this money, so he really wasn't interested in money. The other guy really didn't care about money, even though he made $1 million, didn't have a lot of money. And so these two guys, they were sitting around, and so what they did, they started watching gangster movies like the Godfather trilogy together.
This could be dangerous.
And they bonded, and they said, you know, so they were both at the same place in life, really. One was 43, one was 23.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to find something that would ignite their passion, something that they could just go for. And so they got this idea, well, why don't we try to do, you know, technology and music, let's try to bring it together. And he realized that this whole idea of the internet and music was really failing the music industry. See what's happening is that revenues are going down in the music industry. And the reason is nobody wants to pay for music anymore.
Right.
They think they should have it free. I mean, in the old days, people would go out and buy an album, or they would buy a whole CD.
Sure.
But now with, say, the iTunes deal, you just buy one track if you buy it at all. And so now, even though the artists are actually have more and more people listening to their music, they're selling less and less. So music revenues are going down. And actually, iTunes, while it did help monetize this, it actually took a big cut out of the record companies because they take 30% off the top. And then you're only selling one track at a time. So iTunes actually sort of hurt the music industry in an odd sense because they really weren't getting that much out of it. So there had to be another model. And Daniel, it turns out that his parents, his mother was involved with music a lot, and they had a lot of musicians around, and he really liked musicians. So he said, I've got to find a way to help the musicians. I've got to bring technology. And so he wanted to get into streaming over the internet. Now he knew that the old peer-to-peer sites for downloading illegal, like Napster, where I had really hurt the industry. But it was clear that Napster, you know, any music on demand, anytime, is what the consumers wanted. So I said, how could I give a Napster-like experience and still generate revenue for the artists?
Mm-hmm.
How could I give the consumers what they want? Because it's not that the consumers necessarily want to steal it all. They just want an easy interface.
Right.
They want to have access to everything. They don't have to buy this and then have to import it around. So he needed a different interface. He needed a completely different model. So Martin Lorenzo and he were sitting around at this thing trying to think about this. So they said, okay, we have to first of all get a name for the company. So they were sitting around in X apartment, and so they were in different rooms, and so they would yell names out to each other, and they'd think about it. And so Lorenzo yelled something to Daniel, and Daniel misunderstood it, and he thought he said Spotify, but he really didn't say it. He said something else. So he typed in Spotify, and there were no Google hits. I mean, it was clean. Nothing came up at all. It was a word that had never been used on the internet. So they said, that's it. So they immediately went out and registered the name, and they said, okay, now we need to figure out a company.
They got the name.
Now, we've got the name, and now this was the thing. Lorentzen was still chairman of the board for his company, Trade Doubler, and he was still working there, and Daniel said, you know, Martin Lorentzen. He said, Martin, are you really going to quit? You really want to start a company? He said, look, I don't believe you're going to go in with me unless you quit your job at Trade Doubler and come in with me. And then I want you to wire me $1 million, and I'll match it with one of my million, and mm-hmm. and we'll start out. So they, so 1 week later, Martin sent out a press release that he was resigning from the board and resigning from all work on Trade Doubler. And that morning that the press release came out, $1 million showed up in Daniel's account. So now they said, okay, now we got $1 million, $2 million, we got a name. What are we going to do? He said, well, if we want to give music like Napster, where it's free, and we want to pay a revenue stream to the artist, we're going to have to generate revenue some way, and so we should probably have to do it with ads. So we'll use the ad model. And so I thought, okay, we'll start out with the ad model. And so that was sort of the general idea. Well, so what they did, but it also turned out that iTunes was extremely effective interface. People did like to search around for playlists and generate playlists on iTunes. And so iTunes had features that were very good. Napster had features that were very good. So what they did, they created a prototype that was based on Apple iTunes, where you could get access to all of these songs in an Apple iTunes deal, but they were free. And then it turns out that he had a black flat screen TV in his apartment that was a Samsung, and so they made sort of the graphical outlines to look like this black TV. So that was sort of the graphics inspiration, and they copied the iTunes look and feel, and then they went out to get ads. Now the problem is, in order to get this thing going, they had to get rights from the record companies. They didn't want to launch it with pirated stuff.
Sure.
So they had to get the record companies to sign on. So here's this 22-year-old kid shows up and says, hey, I got a way I can totally transform your business.
Well, is that your 22-year-old voice?
That's right. and they said, well, give me some data, and then we'll look at it. Well, okay, how's it going to get data?
I mean, for something that doesn't exist.
So, so that was just the way he said, well, let me get back to you on that. So what he did, because people really didn't understand it, so he created the interface with all pirated songs. So he populated his interface with, several hundred pirated songs, and he let them play with it. And they played around with it, and they said, actually, this is pretty neat. This is not bad. So he was able then to get the record companies to sign on for it there in Sweden. And they started there, and then shortly thereafter they moved to Scandinavia, then France, the UK, and Spain, and they sort of moved across Europe. Now, while he was trying to get the record companies to sign on, they were burning through money like get crazy because they had salaries, they were doing all this coding. And they also, in order to get record companies to sign on with them, they would give them $1 million upfront cash to get them to sign on. Well, that's real money.
That's not, yeah.
Yeah, so it turned out that Martin, of course, Trade Doubler, he had made $70 million on his deal. He was putting in the extra money. So he put in $1 million there, and they ended up putting in another $5 million. And VCs thought these guys were idiots. There was no no VC would give them any money at all. But they believed in it. And what happened was in Sweden, which was quite transformational, 60% of the people signed up to Spotify. And they had...
That's pretty amazing.
So they had the free version of Spotify where there were ads. Okay, you pay $5 a month, and then you can get rid of the ads, but you still can listen to music with your desktop. If you want to move your playlist around to any portable device, you pay $10 a month. And then your iPad, your iPhone, any device you have, your playlist comes around with you. The other thing that he did, he integrated it with Facebook. When he launched, he felt that Facebook was the perfect revenue, so perfect venue for getting people. And so he went, and they had five engineers spend full time in the Facebook headquarters while they developed this application, and Zuckerberg loved it. He loved it. He loved because they were so careful to honor sort of the tradition of Facebook. So what was happening is that you go onto Facebook with Spotify, and then you see the playlists of all your friends. And so then all of a sudden you can share playlists with each other. And so you've got all the music in the world. You don't pay anything for it. And if you're paying the $10 a month, you've got that playlist showing up on your iPhone or on your smartphone or mm-hmm. on your iPad, anywhere. So it's like you've got music everywhere.
Okay.
And so they convinced a lot of people to pay $10 a month. Well, it turns out the record industry, on average, people pay only $13 a year when they buy music. So he's actually getting to spend $120 a year, you see? So he's increasing the revenue. It turned out in Sweden, Spotify, 60% of the customers were paying, and Spotify was generating the bulk of the revenue for the record industry in Sweden. Mm. And so it went from Spotify being this weird idea to being the tool that's going to save the record industry. And all of a sudden, everybody wanted to be on Spotify. Everybody. And so now, what they did, though, in order to make certain that, because so he's got licensing agreements with everyone that only last a few years. So the question is, well, you better be careful. They just might not license you again.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually cut deals with Warner, Universal, EMI, and Sony, and he gave them equity stakes. So they collectively have about 20% equity in the operation. And now eventually the VCs, venture capitalists, they said, you know, this Spotify may not be such a wacky deal. So they ended up getting 50. They went through three rounds of funding. The first round was $50 million, and I think they were valued maybe at maybe at $50 million, and they were valued at $100 million or something. The second round was $50 million. They were valued at $250 million. The third round they got $100 million with a valuation of $1 billion. And right now, based on their revenue, they're making about $300 million a year in ongoing revenue through ads and through subscriptions. They're probably worth about $2 billion.
Amazing.
So it turns out that Eck still owns 15% of the company. So 15% of $2 billion is $300 million.
Not bad.
And Lorenzo earns 20% of the company because he had to dump in more money from his $70
million. Mm-hmm.
And so in 2012, Daniel Ek was ranked as 395th on the British Rich List with a net worth of $307 million. So this, I actually love this story because it was really a case of somebody finding his passion, and he went after this Spotify vision, and he stuck with it because he believed in it. And now the artists love him.
Mm-hmm.
And so the artists, everybody's rooting for him, and I think this is going to go. I mean, I actually hadn't paid much to tell you the truth, I had not paid much attention to Spotify, mm-hmm. so I downloaded, mm-hmm. I started playing around with it. I mean, all the playlists are there. I mean, wow. I was listening to music right away, and you only get an ad, you don't get an ad that often. I'm not really into all this Facebook stuff, so I didn't want to share playlists and all of that,
yeah.
but I could see where this could be pretty powerful. So there you go. Everything you want to know about Daniel Ek, the co-founder and CEO of Spotify.
Well, I hope you are paying attention because you are going to be quizzed on this here. And at that point, when we do that, you could win a prize. So stay tuned for the pop quiz here on Tech Talk Radio and Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 1077 FM, HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in
software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the Classroom of the Airways.
Yep.
This is not really a radio
show.
No, it's
not.
This is Classroom of the Airways. And, of course, if it's a classroom, there's going to be an assessment.
Not a test, but an assessment.
We call it a pop quiz. Earlier in the show, we're talking about the co-founder and CEO of Spotify. Where did the name Spotify come from, and why did they select it?
Exactly.
If you get the correct answer, you win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
The third guy in the studio.
Or Karim Dining Room.
Is not eligible to win.
Yes.
So you need to get that answer to us quickly. And you can do that by dialing these 10 numbers in the correct order. If you're calling from west of Copenhagen, Denmark, it is 877-936-9333. East of Urbana, Maryland, 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333.
If you're calling in from Siberia, you can use Skype. Simply go to Tech Talk Radio 1, and that's forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
I think we have a...
The party don't start walk-in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop, make it pop.
There we go. You know, we actually had an inquiry earlier as to what your theme song is.
Oh, really?
Yes,
yeah, that was the first letter. Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think it was all-purpose cheer that came up with the term Spotify. If you want to know. I thought you wanted knowledge. That's why I'm sharing with you. Listen, thanks for letting me bust into your show. But real quickly here.
Okay.
The iPad Air. Somebody talk to me here. What is that all about? Do you know?
iPad Air?
Air. It's the new iPad.
It's supposed to be thinner and lighter, from
lighter?
What I heard. I haven't seen it. But, yeah, it's supposed to be thinner and lighter.
Okay.
It weighs only a pound.
It?
I haven't played around with it yet.
Marianne hasn't won one yet?
No, she hasn't. I'm still on the old iPad 2. I don't even have an iPad 3 yet.
No, I don't either. I like the Mini. The Mini, I understand. The new Mini is supposed to be nice.
I think the Mini is nice. Yeah, they're going thinner and thinner.
That's Jimbo, was that pointing towards your Mini?
I have the, it's a refurbished Mini, but it's...
A refurbished?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you bought it refurbished?
I bought it refurbished, yeah.
Okay.
And it's
may we be nosy and ask you what's the current...
I believe all in it was $429.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and it's internet capable. Yeah, okay. Wasn't bad.
Oh, it's Ninjas, you got your internet $10 a month or whatever it is.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
We're stalling,
right.
So you know who can get on. You know what? And give me the answer.
I got the one with the it's got the white border on it, and I got this tiny little. So keep typing, Doc.
Nice.
I'm running out of stuff here.
There we go.
So you can see a picture.
So
we'll hold that up, sir.
Here we go. The computers in this studio are really slow.
I'm not going there, Doc. We only
have an hour.
Okay. Right. Thinner, fat, lighter, and faster. That's what they're saying it is.
Faster?
It weighs 1 pound, mm-hmm. down from 1.4 pounds.
But it's still the same size,
it's
lighter.
20% thinner.
Thinner.
And 28% lighter than the fourth generation. Oh, it's got the same 9.7-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the A7 processor that's in the 5S. That means it's a 64-bit processor.
Right.
So it's faster, 72 times faster than the iPad.
Do we have to, excuse me, Doc, just a real quick question. Do we have to broadcast Dr. Zhivago style? I am freezing in here. What's going on? What is this?
This is like...
Is this the Ice Palace?
We're
going to
be serving vodka later on.
This is
at room
really?
Temperature.
That's exactly, you know, we got hot toddies coming. that's actually, look at this, a cup over there, it's like a hot toddy.
You didn't notice the cured meat hanging off in the corner, did you?
Really, man? Mm-hmm. And Jimmy is over here drinking iced tea. That's a tough guy over here.
It is.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, the thing is... The problem with Apple, they're not really innovating that much. No. I mean, thinner, lighter, really not transformational.
No, it's not.
That's why Samsung is like picking
up. Well, you're going that way. You're going there, aren't you?
That's why Samsung is actually picking up market share.
Yeah, they are.
You know, because people are catching up with it. So I think the 64-bit processor might help with certain applications like gaming. It helps with image processing. But if you're just reading a book, it doesn't make much difference.
So I have to say this. With Steve Jobs' unfortunate passing, I think the brand's really suffered, don't you?
I think it suffered because there was a certain amount of stuff in the pipeline which Steve worked on.
And they ran out.
And the pipeline's going to end. And so then what's going to come up? What's going to be the next big
lighter and breezier doesn't cut it. I mean, come on. What's the new stuff?
That is the problem.
And now you're singing Samsung praises. That's where we're going.
I know.
I can't believe I'm hearing this.
Me neither.
Yeah.
But wow. I mean, he got me drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, he does. But Samsung, people are saying their camera's so good, and so there are just a lot of other features. Where Apple has the competitive edge, though, is in this ecosystem where they've got, you've got the application, you've got the App Store, you've got iTunes. So people get hooked into the App Store especially. And the iTunes. Yeah. You're on the iCloud, so all of the support structure to the iPad and the iPhone is tremendous, and Samsung doesn't have that.
No.
So that's what makes Apple sticky. People don't want to actually leave it because they got all the stuff on the iCloud.
That's one of my problems. I can't leave.
You can't leave. You're basically locked in with iTunes. Now you could go to Spotify just forget about
iTunes. You just want to say that word.
He does.
Spotify. He just wants to say the word. Okay, Spotify.
It's pretty cool.
So that's what you do.
I guess my needs have been met.
Mm-hmm. Plus, you're starting to turn blue, so you got to get out before frostbite sets in.
This is unbelievable.
Also in the same thing, Apple passes Coke as the world's top brand.
Not surprising.
They're the real thing. They're the new Coke.
Wow.
Samsung is the new Pepsi.
Wow.
Think about that.
Time to leave now.
That's why it's cooler in here, because there's so much brain activity.
Got to cool him down.
Exactly. So anyway. Bye. David, thank you. Okay. Now we return to our regular program already in progress. Let us go to Doc. Oh, we got stuff to give away here.
Okay, listen. Let me get back in the saddle here. I'm off losing track of what I'm supposed to be doing.
We're going to line one. Marshall is hanging in there. Marshall, good morning. How are you, sir?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Doc, go ahead and ask the question, please.
Oh, yeah. Earlier in the show, we talked about Daniel Ek, who was co-founder of Spotify. Where did the word Spotify come from? Why did they select it?
Well, they were throwing around different names, and it was called in from a different room. He misunderstood it as Spotify. He did a Google search on it and could not find it anywhere on the internet, so he said, that's it.
You are correct!
I didn't realize
100%.
It was an essay question today.
That is correct. You have two tickets to fine dining to the Escoffier Dining Room. Excellent, excellent.
Marshall, thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. Hang on a second here. We'll get your information. Doc, we need to make a little decision on the fly here because we're so late. You just want to hang around?
Let's just hang around a little bit more.
Okay, all right.
Okay, let's go. The U.S. is losing control of the internet.
Okay,
all the major internet organizations have pledged at a summit in Uruguay to free themselves of the influence of the U.S. government. Now, the directors of ICANN, the Internet Engineering Task Force, the Internet Architecture Board, the World Wide Web Consortium, the Internet Society, and all five of the regional Internet address registries have vowed to break their association with the U.S. government. They called for an acceleration of the globalization of ICANN and IANA functions toward an environment in which all stakeholders, including all governments, participated with equal footing. Now, IANA stands for the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority. They're responsible for the global coordination of all the DNS routes, the IP addressing, and all the other ways that messages are routed through the Internet. ICANN stands for the Internet Corporation for Assigned Numbers and Names. ICANN coordinates the unique identifiers across the world. Without that coordination, we wouldn't have one global Internet. People try to be using the same things more than once. This change was caused by the recent situation regarding, you know, security concerns in the U.S. and the U.S. using the internet to spy on people, to spy on everything. And so now they're saying, look, we are so worried about the influence of the U.S. over the internet, we want to become separate of that. And of course, the ICANN is actually is a nonprofit that started out under contract from the Department of Commerce. And so now they want to actually become independent of the U.S. So that's kind of a major shift in focus, and I think it'll have a long-term impact on the way the internet evolves. Have you ever heard about the, you know, we're getting, you've heard of big data.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a big data thing. The data's getting so big they're running out of names. You've got petabytes, exabytes, zettabytes, yottabytes. Have you heard all these things?
We talked about zettabytes one day.
Yeah, we have. Okay, so here's the deal. We're actually running out of prefixes for it. So a yottabyte is a one with 24 zeros after it. I mean, that's
a lot of stuff.
That is a lot of stuff. And few database managers are thinking beyond the yottabyte. But they're trying to figure. They don't have anything after the yottabyte. So then circling around. So somebody came up with a brontabyte, which would be 1,000 yottabytes, or mm-hmm. a geopyte, which would be 1,000 brontobytes, or whatever the next level of is. They're trying to figure it out. Now, the brontobyte and geobyte have their own entries neither one has an entry in Wikipedia, which means they don't really exist. And now somebody
quick snap them up, and that way we can make a company.
Now somebody on Wikipedia they're making all kinds of. They said, well, maybe there should be helabyte, which means hell of a lot of data. But you know but people thought we should just forget about helabyte. So here's what we got now. You got the kilobyte, which is 1,000, and the megabyte, which is 1,000,000, and the gigabyte, which is 1,000,000,000. Then you got the terabyte, the petabyte, the exabyte, the zettabyte, and the yottabyte. That's how we have them. They're trying to get what's after the yottabyte.
You know, in parlance of the young kids, they say something is hella good. That means it's really good. That's so maybe.
So let's just say, how big is a gigabyte? Well, a gigabyte would be, say, a pickup truck filled with paper would be about 1 gigabyte of data.
Okay.
Or it would be 20 meters of books on a shelf. That would be 2 gigabytes. 100 gigabytes would be a floor of academic journals. Let's say, what would a terabyte be?
What would it be?
Okay, now say 1 terabyte would be all the X-ray film in a large technical hospital, or it could be, or it could be 5,000 trees made into paper and printed would be 1 terabyte,
mm-hmm.
or 2 terabytes would be an academic research library, or 50 terabytes. Or let's say 10 terabytes would be the printed collection of the entire Library of Congress would be 10 terabytes.
Mm.
Okay, how about a petabyte? Well, 1 petabyte would be 5 years of the Earth observation. You know, NASA's got these satellites going around the Earth. 5 years of data from the Earth observation system would be 1 petabyte. And an exabyte would be all words that have ever been spoken by all human beings.
Wow.
So there you go. There's all this more you ever wanted to know about.
It's a lot of stuff.
Big data.
Yes.
Listen, this show just flew by.
We
could hardly keep up with it all. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. Make certain to go to the Stratford website, stratford.edu. Check out our programs and let them know that you heard about them on Tech Talk.
Tuned in later when you hear this program again. This program will replay here on Federal News Radio tomorrow at 6 in the afternoon.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Sports coming up on the radio today. We've got Navy football against Pitt. The pregame show starts at noon, 1 o'clock for the kickoff. Then we've got Caps All Access tonight at 6 o'clock. And then the Caps versus the Calgary Flames here on Federal News Radio at 9:45 this evening. The forecast is going to be sunny and chilly today, high close to 60 degrees. Right now outside our studios in Northwest, lots of sun, 45 degrees, 10 a.m. at Federal News Radio.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility.